everybody. Welcome back to the Harmonics Podcast. Special episode this week. As it is currently, the day you're hearing this, on or about the 20th anniversary of Harmonics.
What?
20 years.
20 years already?
That is almost drinking age.
The drinking one more started year to a go. Long time ago.
One more year to go and Harmonics can start drinking.
Right? That is a long time. And to talk about that, we have our co-founders, Alex and Aran.
Hello.
Hi there.
Aran, we had to pull away from academia. He's teaching a class at MIT currently.
That is correct.
I'm teaching a class at MIT. You can't see it, but he's wearing professor's robes right now. Mm-hmm. Very Hogwartsy. And Alex is here. Alex was in his office.
Yes, I was.
Okay, 20 years. I want you to paint a picture for me, because I actually think this is kind of incredible when you think bands talk about this a lot in general, where you're young and you start a band, and then the ones who are successful that end up lasting for years and years, it's like almost a marriage. You guys were young, you came out of school, you started a company that is still now together 20 years on. Walk me through your process. Like, you're both at the MIT Media Lab, right? As grad students?
We were office mates there together, yeah.
And where did the idea for the company begin?
The idea for the company came from Alex. We were both grad students, office mates, as Alex was saying. When it came time to graduate, I honestly wasn't sure what I was going to be doing, and I thought, maybe I'll just get a job. So I think I interviewed at Microsoft or something like that, you know.
You did? Sure. They offered you a job.
I think they did, yeah. I think Alex's job prospects were not as good.
Well, you know, I basically just, I wanted to keep doing interactive music stuff, which is what had been doing in grad school, and there was no interactive music business, so right. It's not like anyone was going to offer me a job to do that. So starting a company was pretty much our only option. I remember having coffee with Aran at an Au Bon Pain in Cambridge and asking him if he wanted to start a company together.
Yeah, and it didn't take me long to
really
to say you're all in
right away.
Yeah, pretty
totally,
much.
Totally, yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, you're right out of school. You know, you got nothing to lose, no responsibilities. So it was awesome. Great idea. You know, I it's funny. My dad was always thinking I should go and get a PhD. You know, and become like a professor and that type of thing.
He's a PhD himself. Is that right?
He is. Yeah. Yes, and all that. but Alex's dad actually had started a company. And so entrepreneurship was sort of...
So that's good. That's sort of what I was getting at. Like, not everyone makes a decision to start a company right out of school. So
yeah.
There was something in your background that you knew this is an achievable thing.
Yeah, my dad was an entrepreneur, and so I was sort of hardwired from it.
Gotcha.
Before it from an early age.
And I think that was really cool because the thought just hadn't occurred to me. And, of course, now I'm really glad that it happened.
Of course, after 20 years, you know, now you're teaching a class at MIT, so you're like, now you're making your dad happy finally.
Back to sort of full circle, yeah, back to that, but yeah. It was a great idea. I'm glad it happened, and, you know, and then off we went.
I mean, not to get too personal, but I think you had at least a single child at the time.
Or? I did. I had a five-year-old son at the
time. So it's not like it's not nothing to make that decision, because like that's a risky choice to go out and start a company. So that's.
I agree. It's funny. You know, I had said, "Well, I had no responsibilities," which is true, but Alex did.
Right.
So
it's bold.
I have to say that was pretty ballsy, Alex.
Well, my parents let me live in their house for a while we were getting started. I mean,
so the first Harmonics headquarters was your parents' house.
Well, it was two places.
It was a nice house.
I was living in my parents' house, and Aran was living in his apartment in Cambridge. And
they had a swimming pool.
We did.
Oh. Yeah.
And nice. We would just go back and forth between our two places to work during the first year.
That's awesome.
Oh, the stories from back then. Yeah. So when we were at Alex's house. It was a nice swank house, you know, his parents' house.
Sure.
We'd like sit by the pool and talk about what we wanted to do and design music interactions and stuff like that. And then because I lived in Cambridge, which was a little more central, that's typically where we took investor meetings. Of course, I lived in this cranky old apartment right in between Central Square and Harvard Square, you know, between MIT and Harvard. And I had two other roommates. And it was this third floor apartment. You know, I think it was under rent control. I was paying like $300 a month.
Well, you were also kind of a slob. Like, I remember one business meeting we had where I was, like, literally kicking your boxer shorts, like, under your futon as an investor was, like, walking into up your stairwell.
That's right. So my bedroom was also the sort of the, you know, Cambridge headquarters, and that's where we took the investor meetings. Iran, hurry up, man. There's an investor coming. What? And
was it still just the two of you at that point?
Yeah, that's right.
So had you, Alex, had you had business background? Like, how did you know to tackle these things?
Well, so neither of us had any formal business training. You know, we got some guidance from our parents and that sort of thing. But mainly it was that, you know, MIT has an incredibly vibrant and active entrepreneurial community. Mm. And we got an enormous amount of help from a lot of experienced MIT entrepreneurs who were early advisors to the company. You know, Brad Feld is one who's actually still on our board and an active investor this day, you know, now 20 years later. But he was actually one of the first people at MIT who was, you know, helped us get our heads screwed on straight about what it actually meant to start a company and how to go about it back when we were just kind of like technology kids.
That's just what's so kind of remarkable to me is that, like, that support system was there.
It was, you know, and it's much more there today.
Right.
It's kind of amazing.
Clearly they've seen that it works, right? Like it's a...
Yeah, and entrepreneurship is now huge everywhere and especially around MIT. Just to give you an example, when we graduated, there was this contest that had just gotten started a few years back called the 10K competition, which is an entrepreneurship or business plan competition. And you apply, and if you win, you get $10,000 towards your business, which, you know, sounds great. Well, today it's called the 100K,
you know.
And so, and they actually give out more than 100K. They give out almost $200,000 a year to a bunch of different companies. Top prize is 100K. You know,
by the way, we did not win the 10K competition when we entered.
That's right. We did not win.
We got 0K that year.
We got 0K. But like Alex said, we met some good people.
And was this early enough that it still wasn't yet the dot-com boom or basically any tech company? I think Chris, Alex, your brother said back then if you had a ponytail, you could get funding for a company. Had that era hit yet?
It hadn't quite hit. It was starting around that time. And we started the company in spring of 95, but we weren't really like fundraising for real until like maybe like sometime in 96, a year or so later. And it was starting to heat up at that time, but it actually ended up hurting, I think, more than it helped because... you know, we had some, like I literally had a couple of early investors, once we'd raised real angel capital, calling me and saying, well, you know, why aren't you changing your name to harmonix.com? What's your .com play? It's all about .com this and .com that.
And eyeballs. Get
and eyeballs.
Eyeballs.
You need eyeballs.
You need eyeballs.
And that, you know, it was like all of like the worst excesses of that era. And, you know, I had to, like, patiently explain to some, this was not universally true, but, you know, for some of our investors, I had to explain to them that is like, that's not what this is about.
Right.
We're not taking like an existing business and trying to disrupt it by putting it on the internet, which is really kind of what all of that was about. We're trying to create new experiences, and it's not really relevant what our distribution channel for those experiences is yet.
And was the first product the Axe?
That was the first product.
That was. We were not making video games yet. It was just a...
That's right. I mean, I don't know if people know this, but Harmonix did not start as a video game company. It was about 5 years after we had started that we realized we should be getting into video games. But the first game was the Axe. The first product was the Axe. It wasn't a game. It was a CD-ROM.
Windows 95.
Windows 95. And that didn't... Alex, how many units did that thing sell?
I think in the hundreds. Like,
yeah.
I don't think we broke 1,000 units with that.
It was super, super depressing.
Yeah.
But then... You rolled on. Like, what was the next thing that you rolled into from there? That's
well,
a big thing.
There was one tiny bit of success from that, maybe, or maybe you'd call it a non-failure, which was that we managed to convert that Axe product into something that was an installation that is now at Disney and
Epcot Center.
At Epcot Center. And in fact, it's actually still there. Which
I went a couple years ago and sought it out.
Yeah, it's called What If Music Were in the Air or something like that. And the
it's
idea
our
is
first revenue as a company.
That's
not
right.
Very much of it, but it was
something.
And then next big project after that, was it Frequency?
Yeah, boy, well, we were chasing a lot of things for years, but essentially it was around 98 that it started to become clear. You know, for the first music games that appeared in Japan, there was Parappa, of course, and Beatmania and Dance Dance Revolution, and we started thinking
and
seriously.
And was it you that was plugged into those?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, Parappa in particular, really, there was kind of a light bulb moment for a bunch of us where we realized that, you know, we had to figure out how to merge what we wanted to do with music with mm-hmm. video games, and that some of those early Japanese games had shown the way. And it was around 98 that we decided to start recruiting video game development talent, and that was what led us to hire Greg LaPiccolo.
Ryan Lesser. Josh Randall. Dan Schmidt actually had been at the company for a while, but so we had some sort of, you know, game blood in us. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the company went a pretty dramatic transformation at that point in time. We weren't that big, but we had a pretty big layoff, and essentially it was kind of a restart. Mm.
And so it was in early 99 that we started prototyping the game that would eventually become Frequency. And it was sort of ready to shop in 2000. And that's when we were shopping it to publishers. And it was ultimately Sony who signed it in 2000. And then we finished it in 2001. And that was our first game.
Thank you, Shu Yoshida.
Thank you, Shu. Yes.
Yeah, what was the story that you somehow got in touch with him directly through, like, the front desk?
Dornbrook did.
Yeah, Mike Dornbrook, yeah. He just called Sony and asked, Sony Computer Entertainment, and asked to talk to, like, someone in product development, and the receptionist forwarded him to the desk of the head of product development in North America for Sony. That was Shu at the time. And Shu, like, amazingly, like, took Mike's call
and Mike
agreed to meet with us.
Yeah,
Mike somehow Mike talked him
got
into
a
meeting with us.
Yeah,
it was amazing. Yeah.
So Frequency sold millions and millions of units, right? And that's the end of the story.
No. Frequency did not.
It did better than VX.
Sure.
Yes.
But not really enough for it to be considered a real success.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. I mean, commercially it was not a success. It got great reviews and it won a bunch of awards and all of that.
I think it sort of put us on the map, right? In the sense of now we were known as a company that could make games, knew how to successfully ship a game. Mm-hmm. The game itself was a little quirky, but it was fun. I think the people who played it had a good time.
Right, and so then you rolled on to Amplitude. And Amplitude, from Frequency to Amplitude, is sort of a hallmark of what I think Harmonix does a lot, is where we come up with a really cool idea, put it out there, and then if we get the chance, we refine that idea into something even better, which we got to do with Amplitude, which we've done over the years with our other products, too.
And which we're now doing with Amplitude again right now after all these years, making it even better still.
Right. But I think that the narrative I'm sort of pushing you guys into that I think is interesting about Harmonix is it was a long time until the company was technically successful. And I think that's super impressive just to keep a company going that long before you...
It's true. In fact, you know, I do a lot of mentoring of entrepreneurs and, you know, this 100K competition that I was telling you about, mm-hmm. I'm now a judge for that competition, which is fun. Most companies don't last 20 years.
Right.
You know, I mean, of course, the companies you've heard of have because those are the really successful ones. But a lot of companies, you know, barely make it a few years. And so the fact that we've been around for 20 is, it's a little unreal.
Even in games as well.
Especially in games. The issue is it's such a hits-driven business
that,
I mean, either you have, generally speaking, either you have a hit, in which case you can be very, very profitable, or most of the time you don't have a hit product and you are just struggling to stay alive, which is how most... you know, small studios are. They're just like living hand to mouth and scrappily trying to figure out a way to, you know, live another day.
And you know what it really is a survival game or a persistence game, I suppose. If you can last long enough amount of time to get the hit, or if it's a game company just to sort of find the right product formula, mm-hmm. you know, that works. Then you can do it. I think a lot of companies probably could do it if they had enough time. And the nice thing about how Harmonix went is that we had the runway. You know, first of all, Alex, to his credit, was great at raising money. You know, even though we didn't have a lot to show for in terms of the standard metrics, revenue, profit, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Alex did a great job of continuing to raise money, and we had really wonderful investors who had faith in us and had patience. And so so it really gave us the opportunity to keep trying and keep working and keep refining until 10 years later Guitar Hero happened. You know, but it took that long.
Yeah, and you're right, though. Like, that probably wouldn't have happened even if you were given the runway, if you hadn't initially had that spark of the interaction of music and games, like starting right with Frequency, even with the Axe to some degree, like there was something there that whether it hit the mainstream immediately or not, like I feel like basically, for the most part, most of the games we've made at Harmonix have kind of built on that spark. Like that, we talk about the flow state, like the things that we were able to do with that very first game has kind of spread out into everything we do in mm-hmm. some form or another. I wouldn't sell yourself short on just like any company that has enough time will succeed to get that hit, because I think you had a good confluence of talent and tenacity.
And belief.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we had this, like, to quote Parappa the Rappa, you gotta believe, you know, or I gotta believe. And it's, the mission statement of the company when we started was to let everyone in the world experience the joy of making music. Mm-hmm. And it's something that Alex and I deeply believed in and still do. And so when the first couple of things didn't really work out, we didn't think, oh, I guess people don't want to experience music.
Right.
You know, we thought, well, maybe we just hadn't quite done it right yet. Mm-hmm. And so it was this really deep belief that people can connect with music and want to connect with music in ways that maybe are not possible yet, but it was up to us to try to invent those new ways.
Yeah, and I think over the course of the years, we've covered the whole Guitar Hero through Rock Band saga, so that's why I didn't focus on it for this podcast, because I think people know that story. But I wanted to tell that story of like where the company came from, and I do think it's actually, I'm biased because I work here, but I think it's actually very special in that like it started from that idea, and it was a bold idea right out of like the media lab to be like, I'm going to make a company built around this idea. And it took a lot of time and work, but you got there. And like, I think that's really remarkable. And we are a very mature company at this point, if we're at 20 years, right? Like, and we're still doing it in all the products we're working on.
We're actually kind of immature.
Well, I can't speak to that. But I think that's really cool. I think that's it makes it for me, and I think most of the employees that I could speak for, like, it makes the place so fun to work because it isn't another brown sepia tone shooter being thrown into the market. Like, the games we make are unique and they're special, and they're when we hit that bar, like, they're so fun.
Well, I want to go back to a thing that you just said, though, which is that, you know, we got there, which of course is true on some level, right? Like, we toiled in obscurity for like 10 years, and then we finally, you know, the stars aligned and we finally had a hit with Guitar Hero and then Rock Band after that. And that was incredible, right? But the thing about this work is you're never actually done, right? You've never actually gotten there, because as soon as you've done that and the dust settles from that, then like you have, as a creator, you have to ask yourself, like, okay, well, what's the thing that we could do that's better than this? Mm-hmm. Like, there's always something better that you could do. And
yeah,
so,
there is a moving target.
Yes, it is.
Right.
You know, and
that's what keeps things fresh. Like,
yeah,
like,
and in this business, you're only as good as your last hit.
Yeah.
Right. Which we found out.
Yeah.
We don't have to go into right now, but yeah. It's, you know, even 10 years in or 15 years in, we're still learning lessons and we're still sort of humbled by how difficult it is to do what we do and survive.
Well, absolutely. And to see people like Greg, who's not on the podcast, but who is currently running the creative train with the Rock Band 4 team.
Rock Band 4?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you've been away. to see him get excited about these creative ideas that he's had for ages and getting closer and closer to actually nailing that idea that he's had forever, that concept, that's super exciting, because he's also been here almost, you know, a real long time, and no one here is resting on their laurels. And I think that's what makes
the certainly
place
true, yeah.
And energizing to work at.
Well, I love this company. Obviously, you know, it's the thing that Alex and I started. It's our baby. But, you know, I'm really proud of the games we've made Certainly. But the thing I like even more is what this company's like, you know, and the people around here. And, you know, that's I'm like more proud of that than the games we've made.
Totally.
You know, just this, the
and the collection of people here is kind of dumbfounding.
That in itself is an achievement, just like to have assembled these Avengers of video games. yeah, for sure. So we are going to wrap up. That was quick, and I'm sure we could go for hours on harmonics. But
let's just do this again at the 40th anniversary.
Done. Done. We'll do it on whatever the future analog of podcasting is. It'll be a crystal. We're talking into a crystal, and that's delivered through
my mind. Alex
and Ron, thank you for 20 years. Does it feel like you're married to a degree?
Oh, totally.
Yeah?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
So the band analogy where people in bands are like, yeah, it feels like you're married to these people. Same sort of deal.
Well, actually, when we got started, a number of people warned me that that we would end up hating each other because entrepreneurship is very hard. It's extremely trying, very stressful, and it breaks a lot of friendship. Like, a lot of friends start companies and end up breaking their friendships over the stresses of starting a company. But, you know, I think both of us have been very lucky in that we've, you know, it's done nothing but strengthen our relationship over the last 20 years.
Yeah, totally. It's great.
Yeah, that's quick sidebar. Our friend Brad Feld appears in a documentary that's on Netflix that's about the maker industry. And that exact thing that you just described happens. Like, no spoilers, but that's a spoiler. But, like, it is. It's very common for people who start these companies to...
Yeah, no, well, it's, you know, there's a lot of stress. There's a lot of pressure. It's sad when that happens. But like Alex was saying, we're... You know, I'm really grateful and happy that we're still buddies.
Yeah, and look, frankly, like we couldn't have done it without each other, and we you know, that's also true of, and you know, none of the other people here at the studio that we've mentioned today. Like, none of us could have done it without the group of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, it's one of the things, you know, to go back to the band analogy, that, you know, makes it feel like being a part of a great band. It's like, it's not the talent of any one individual, but there's this special thing happens when, like, the alchemy of a collection of talents, you know, is able to create something that's greater than the sum of its parts.
I think that's a great note to end on. So thanks, guys. Happy 20th. We'll
Thank
be back
you.
In 20 years. And talk to you guys on the next episode. Next time.